It is a beautiful afternoon in the month of July 2023. And of course, our continuing series here on the Branson Podcast Network. It is an opportunity and a platform for us to discover the unsung heroes across our area counties. It was born through an idea, a dedication to the emergency worker, the first responder, ambulance driver, fire, police, line workers, and so much more. We have heroes to talk about, stories to uncover. The Heart of the Emergency Worker podcast series presented and powered by Arvest Bank. Welcome to another episode, and this one has been well worth the wait as I'm joined in studio back again, the lovely Pam Yancey. My dear, it is good to be sitting back in this studio across from you with another story afoot.
Absolutely, Josh. You know, this is one of my favorite things that I do, and you're one of my favorite people. And I am really loving this podcast because we really dig into the heart of what makes people do the things that they do when they walk into danger and understand their heart. It's got to be more than a job. We say this every time when you, it's got to be a calling because it's not just a regular job. It is, it's something that, you know, when they go out, they don't know what's going to happen. Police officer stops a car. When you walk up to it, you don't know what's going to happen when you peck on that window. And so we're doing this because we want people to think about our members of our community that really put their lives on the line to go out and do things to help people. And we hope that once they hear these stories, that there'll just be this growing sense of kindness that comes out of it and gratitude. And that's why this is important, that we hear these stories so that we can really connect, our hearts can connect with that. And when we hope that if nothing else comes out of this, is that we have a better understanding and we're a little bit kinder.
Kindness, appreciation, and understanding. Very, very well said. And this particular episode brings a very special guest, and it's a young man that I have had time with personally outside of the podcast series. I have had more than one interview in my soon-to-be 13-year career, and I hope he knows that he is welcome behind the mic at any time. I mean, he has had a marvelous impact on Stone County. He has improved lives over there. He has been at the forefront of safety and some very difficult parts of his job. He's influenced cadets. Matter of fact, one of them was our last episode that we had here on the podcast series. We told the story of Isaac Johnson, a Taney County Sheriff's Office officer there, and he spoke very highly of our special guest, a big influence in his life. We welcome to the episode here Stone County Sheriff Doug Rader. Doug, my friend, I told you, I said, we saw each other at the Jeff Foxworthy concert backstage, and Miss Sarah had been trying to get everything scheduled, and I told him, I said, let's try one more time. I said, I really need to make this happen. I really want you here because we've got a lot to talk about, and here you are, sir. I just got to say thank you for being on the show, my friend.
Thank you for having me.
It is absolutely a pleasure. So, Doug, I just want to start one spot. I want to start back in your youth and in your family. In your family, sir, was there an influence growing up in law enforcement? Did anybody in your family serve either in the sheriff's department or in law enforcement or in the emergency field, sir?
No.
Not a one?
No.
Not a one. So let me just ask you about this here. So not a one. Did you have any best friends that had served in law enforcement? What was the driving force for you to make that commitment and to go into law enforcement, sir?
I'm laughing because at 20 years old, I decided if I couldn't beat them, I might as well join them.
You couldn't beat them. You might as well join them. So when you got started, sir, can I ask, how young were you when you got into the office?
I turned 21 while I was in the academy.
21 while you were in the academy. So training to get ready for this, where did you do your training? Where was the academy located when you went in?
Law Enforcement Training Institute in Columbia.
Okay.
And back then was in 1990. It was 3 weeks. That was all on the academy was, 3 weeks training.
3 weeks, and then you were off and running.
Yes.
Wow. So at that point, your class, I mean, how big was the cadets class back in the early 90s when you went in?
I don't remember, probably somewhere around 20.
Okay. And your family, Doug, and this is great for me because I love these long-form podcasts because these are all questions that I've never really had the chance to just sit down, unpack, and ask Doug. Were your family always, I mean, majority of Missouri natives, or did you relocate here when you were younger?
No, I'm from Webster County.
Okay.
And my mom and dad still live in a house I grew up with in grew up in in Raider, Missouri.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah, my mom, dad, my sister and brother-in-law still live there in Raider.
Same.
So Raider, was that named after your family?
It was named after my ancestors,
how
yes.
Awesome.
Oh my gosh. Okay, now that, again, this is the story I'm hearing for the very first time, and your mom and dad still live in the same spot.
Yes.
Unreal. And so, now how many siblings do you have, sir?
I just have the one sister.
Just the one sister. And are you the younger sibling?
I'm the favorite sibling, yeah.
You are the favorite sibling.
I don't think you asked that question, Josh. I think you asked the younger.
He gave the right answer. So it's a pressing question as we get a chance to understand. So, Doug, and we had a chance, and I just alluded to this, and I had told you about Isaac Johnson and his comments coming up in the cadet program and the influence that you had on his life, and now him serving proudly over in Taney County. What has been the best part so far in your career? And I want to ask this first thing before I frame the question. How many years in law enforcement today, sir, have you been serving?
I'm in my 33rd year.
3 decades plus,
yes.
That's phenomenal. The best part in those 3 decades, Stone County representing the citizens, protecting life and property. What has been the best part of that 3 decades in serving the community, sir?
Honestly, we started a Stone County Citizens Academy back in 2014, and we've had academies every year and graduated numerous citizens through our Stone County Sheriff's Office Citizens Academy, and out of that has formed our Stone County CIA, or Citizens in Action, and they are a citizen support group to the Sheriff's Office, and they are absolutely phenomenal. I look back 10 years ago when we started this and never dreamed we'd be where we're at today, and our model for how we set up our Citizens Academy and then following our alumni group that's the Citizens in Action is a model for sheriff's departments across the state. Mm-hmm. Every new sheriff's training, every 4 years when new sheriffs come in, I do a class on Citizens Academy,
yeah,
and explain to them how we do it. And it's a great way to get the citizen involved in the sheriff's office, to learn about the sheriff's office, and to bring people together from all over the county to unite for one cause. And I'm pretty proud of that. I'm pretty proud of where we've come, and I didn't do it alone. I've got a lot of great people helping me put that together, but just pretty proud of that, the relationships we've built.
I look at that, and you think about strong roots, you think about the community itself, and bringing the community citizens together, something that they can have tangibly, something they can be proud of. That's a responsibility. That's a responsibility not only to the county in which they reside, but that's a responsibility to each other, and that is not taken lightly. And clearly, that is something to be very, very proud of.
So Doug, one of my coworkers, Ms. Andrea Westerholt, she is a proud graduate of your the class, and I am telling you, when she was going through that, I mean, she would just come in and she was just on cloud nine about learning about, you know, all the ins and outs and everything. And I know she's one of your biggest fans as well. So she speaks so highly of you. But I think that's wonderful. Was this your brainchild, or had it been rolled out in other areas before, but you just took it and kind of made it your own?
So throughout my career, I was especially working narcotics for a long time. I was able to work with a whole lot of different sheriffs and police chiefs. And I realized how important it is for a sheriff to be in tune with the citizens of his county, because that's who you work for. Mm-hmm. I mean, all 32,000 in Stone County is who I work for every day. And I realized that doing a Citizens Academy is a great way to build that relationship between the sheriff's office and the citizens of this county. Because most people, just to start with, don't even know what the difference between a police chief and a sheriff is. And there's mm-hmm. a huge difference in our job duties and who we work for. So being able to educate our citizens and then build those relationships with our citizens has just been great. And that I came into office in 2013, and that was my goal, is to build a good bond between the citizens and the sheriff's office.
And what you have done in a decade is remarkable.
And I didn't do it alone. I've got a lot of good people that work for the sheriff's office that have helped and contributed in that and helped build it up to where it is.
So when you decided to go into the academy, 21 years young, by all accounts, I mean, that is a young age to go into to law enforcement. Really, I think it was only 2 years apart between you, and I was just remembering Isaac's story. Going in at a young age, a sole decision, I mean, not anything that was a family history for you. And I remember Isaac's words. Obviously, he had a drive and a unique motivation to get into the field. Around that time in the 90s, I think anybody could go and you could look at certain social situations at the time. Was there anything going on in the country at that time that might have been a motivating factor for you, Doug, at that point going in? Did you see anything socially that said, hey, I've got to get involved?
Not really. It's just I made my mind up. That's what I wanted to do and drove forward.
Did you have... And it's a critical decision to make, and we it is not lost on us when we talk about law enforcement. Individuals, one thing, but as time progresses, your social situation changes. Person may get married, they may have kids, and that is a whole other level of sacrifice for you. When you first got the job and you were out of the academy, Did you have any idea of the day to day and what the risks would be, and how did you come to grips with that mentally? Because this is a job where there are variables every day. You don't know what the day is going to bring. Every situation could be potentially different. And law enforcement tests a person's mettle different than other professions and fields. It is truly a test. Now, I mean, not only of your heart, your drive, your dedication, but your mental viability. There are different kinds of stresses that can carry with you. How did you get yourself mentally prepared to take that on and tackle that? And what would be your recipe in the day to day to do the job and do it well?
So you ask a whole lot of questions in one question.
I sure did. Did you see me bouncing all over the place like that?
So to answer your question, because like I said, I've been doing this for 33 years. I'm leading my third law enforcement agency over the last 27 years.
Wow.
26 years, somewhere in there. And I've worked with hundreds of different agencies.
Yes, sir.
So what I can tell you is throughout my career, there is people that their heart and soul is in this because it's not a job. It's a career. It's who they are.
Yeah.
And I've seen a lot come and go that they thought this was a good career for them, but it wasn't.
Yeah.
And it didn't, because it's hard.
Mm-hmm.
And you got to be able to handle the stress of the job day in and day out, because it's, like I said, it's who you are. And that's important. And I've seen guys get out of law enforcement because it was really eating them up.
Yeah.
And I've seen guys get out and come back because that's who they are, and they realize that that's where their heart is.
Mm-hmm.
So it is. It's you know, when I started at 21 years of age, I was 10 feet tall and bulletproof, and
could do anything.
Had a flame behind me, and you know, I was very aggressive. Made a lot of arrests. I was a supervisor's nightmare, and I can say that now to being a supervisor, you know, leadership role. I had a very very good police chief there in Versailles, Missouri, Larry Marshall. He could have fired me on numerous occasions, but he told me years later that he seen something good in me and knew I was going to be successful, and he really gave me a lot of chances he probably couldn't have, and I really respect him for that. And I gave Larry was a reserve for me after he retired. He moved down in this area, and so... That he believed in me, and I try to believe in a lot of me. One of my biggest faults, and I was just talking with my command staff the other day about this, and one of my biggest faults is I give people too many chances. And I think
there's trust there.
I think that's because as a young age, I had people give me chances, and I try to put that back into some other young people, and sometimes it bites me, but sometimes it works out great.
By and large, by most, it pays off more, I hope.
I don't know about more, but it's not a bad trait, but it is a bad trait. So,
do you see more of yourself with your staff when they're coming up through the program and they're out there serving for the first time, has that happened a lot to you over three decades? Do you see a lot of yourself and more of the cadets you see come through?
I see a lot of them that have came through that were very aggressive at a young age, and they were hard to supervise. I see a lot of myself in them.
Yeah, yeah. That's got to be fun. The Eagle Part's going, I need you to listen to me for a second. I need you to change this part of yourself.
Well, and at the age of 24, and you know, you're still not completely mature at 24. You think you are. You think you know everything. And, I can look back and laugh about that now. But at 24, I came out of patrol and went to Drug Task Force and went undercover. And I went undercover for a year and a half. And if anything will make you grow up quickly,
it's that.
It's going in an undercover capacity for a year and a half. Because you're out there all on your own, and it's just you.
There is no safety net in that situation,
is
there?
Back then, there was no surveillance teams and having wires on. You was just...
It's not like what we see on TV.
No,
nothing like that. That's a good point.
Most of the time, they didn't know where I was at for days at a time.
And, oh, my gosh.
How did your family... Were you married at that time?
No, he was still married.
But, okay, so family still, sister, mom, dad. How did they deal with that? Because I'm a mama, and I tell you... I'd be worried.
I don't know that my mom really cared for that because, I mean, I looked like a total heathen. I had long hair and a goatee down the middle of my chest and long flowing red hair at that time. It was really red.
Have any pictures?
Oh, yeah.
I'd like to see them.
And so that was a huge learning experience for me, but it was probably the best life experience I could ever have.
Yeah.
Because I went from being in uniform to, back then, everybody respected law enforcement, and I went from being clean cut in uniform to now I'm a long hair and goatee and dirty clothes, and I watched the transformation of how people treated me by the way I looked.
Mm-hmm.
And I would go into restaurants, and I could tell the difference in the way I was treated by the wait staff.
Oh, of course, of course.
Walking through Walmart, mothers would pull their kids away from me as I walked by. It was just a real eye-opener for me of how differently I was treated by... Mm-hmm. I was still the same person, but from my outer appearance. And that taught me never treat people by how they look.
Yeah.
And I try and instill that in all my deputies. I mean...
Never judge a book by its cover.
Yeah, I learned a lot about people, and I learned to treat everybody exactly the same. And I deal with people that are felons or CEOs of companies, millionaires to very poverty level people. And I treat every one of them the same. And I expect my deputies to do the same thing.
Wow. Wow. We have spent a lot of time, no matter what field it is. And Pam, probably, I feel like a broken record from time to time, but it helps the community have a better picture of what goes on behind the scenes. And I believe Pam is getting a picture here. Wow. Wow.
You did have some red hair going on.
You did have some very red hair. That's as
fire red.
That is as red as my off air button.
Everybody that knows me know I'm kind of partial to long hair. My husband has a little bit of long hair on his head. So,
and you're seeing the long hair and the full goatee, aren't you?
The full goatee.
Wow.
And it's a little Waylon Jennings.
I think all these white hairs on my chin now are from all the officers and deputies and agents that I had have worked for me over the years.
Mm-hmm.
Each one of them's got a name.
It's turned them white.
There's the difference. Oh, my gosh. Night and day. Night and day.
Let me see that one. That is night and day. You went from a beautiful flowing goatee down to a nicely trimmed. And
was just the opposite. That was me as a young officer at 21.
And then you switched. Wow.
And then you went back again, right?
That is a night and day change.
Yeah.
That is a night and day change.
You know what? I think what touched me, and I think we all need to be better at doing this, is you were the same person.
Yes.
just the outward appearance was different.
Yes.
And we are so quick to judge or condemn because we have this preconceived idea of what good people look like or, you know, whatever. And so I love that your heart was changed in that and that you look, because not everybody with long hair is bad and not everybody with short hair is good.
Yep. And then I look at, too, as I've got really good friends that both arms are sleeved, or they're sleeved in tattoos or covered in tattoos, and they are some of the best people I know.
Yeah.
But they automatically get judged about covered in tattoos, and I don't have any tattoos. It's not my thing. But
he's like me. There is not a piercing, not a tattoo, nothing like that.
I'd rather spend my money on hunting and fishing equipment.
But, you know, attaboy. See, that leads into what you're most passionate about. Before we get there, I've got to ask this question. I've done it through all the episodes that we've had, and it helps the public have a better frame of mind about what the job entails and what it's like. And expand on this as much as you want. When it comes to a standard day, and this could be going back into your 20s to what it's like now, help us understand the rigors within the sheriff's department. I'd just like to know, what's the longest day that you've experienced in your career? And what would be some of the community misconceptions? Because we see what we see on TV, or we hear about what we hear about in the papers or the radio, but we're not there day to day unless we're taking a ride along, or we take it upon ourselves to go out there and just educate ourselves. What would be a long day for you, Sheriff Rader, and what are some of the stresses?
There's a big difference between what my deputies do every day and what I do every day. My job is pretty much keep the wheels on the bus, and running the sheriff's office.
Yes, sir.
And, you know, I've got a great command staff that they take care of all the things within their divisions, and they do an absolutely wonderful job. But the overall, keeping the sheriff's office running, the budgets, the purchasing, that's what I do every day. And problem solver. I solve people's problems constantly. I get, it's daily. I get 2 to 10 calls a day. People want me to solve their problems, whether it's property line disputes or neighbor disputes or personal problems, and that's a lot of my day.
And I'm glad you said that the way you said it, because again, you're sitting there thinking, well, I may not see the sheriff. I don't know what's going on. I mean, is there anything going on over there? But the way you just framed that, I think, is perfect, because it's more than just traffic stops or other issues. There are investigations that go on the regular, but the wheels and the framework of the office goes from the administrative staff, people taking phone calls, working on paperwork and reports, and you being that persona and that face and fielding 10 phone calls a day. And some days, dare I say it, there's more than 10 phone calls that go on. And you're going to have to make those key decisions of where you're going to go and who you're going to see and who you're going to resolve. You are out there in the community, and I can imagine, you know, we may sit there and think property dispute, that's no big deal. Well, stop for a second and process that. Think about that. Property dispute. You may think, okay, casual conversation into an argument, or dare I say, somebody out there is trying to settle a property dispute and they're armed.
I'm going to tell you, probably one of the top 3 calls that our deputies go to is some kind of neighbor dispute.
Oh.
And it's daily. And you got to think, Stone County, we're a retirement community.
Mm-hmm.
It's a melting pot. People have moved in here from all over the United States, have moved into next to our beautiful lake we have in Stone County.
Yes, sir.
And a lot of times they don't get along. And I tell my deputies, when you go on these calls, this may be one of the worst things that's ever happened to this individual.
Oh, yeah.
It may be the 3rd call of the same nature you've been on that day, but this may be the worst thing that's ever happened to them.
And they want it to be treated like the first call, don't they?
You have to treat them as such. And it is. There's a lot of that, and I get a lot of calls and help with that also, and a lot of people solve their problems and stuff. But it is, and our deputies do a great job. I've got a great bunch of men and women that work every day for the citizens of Stone County, and they handle all kinds of different calls. And we're kind of spread out because There's only one way to cross from the north to the south at the Kimberling Bridge
in
Stone County. You know, Shell Knob, we don't give quite the coverage we should because Shell Knob's kind of an island by itself over there. You have to go up to 20 miles out of our way through Berry County to get back into Stone County. So, and then you go from Jamesville. If you had to go from Jamesville to Carr Lane, which is the northeast corner to the southwest corner, even running code is almost an hour.
Yeah.
And we're not that big of a county, but because of the lake, it takes a long time to get around places.
You have to navigate that, and people have got, I mean, again, when you're in the moment and you make a call and you need assistance from the sheriff's department, you're thinking about your situation. You're thinking about time. And I guess to kind of place this a little bit better as well, we know what the population of the county is. I mean, it's small, but it's large. There's a lot of people that live over in Stone County. And to help people understand a little bit better, I mean, we talk about response time. We talk about assessing need and solving those problems. How many total people do you have on your team right now, sir?
Well, we just passed Prop P last year, which was a law enforcement tax or a tax to go towards law enforcement. And that's been phenomenal because one thing we included right now is we've got a school resource deputy in every school in Stone County now, starting the new school year in August.
Fantastic.
Our three northern schools, Crane, Hurley, and Galena, did not have any school resource deputy in them at all. But this year, they'll each have one deputy in their school.
Mm-hmm.
And that was something we was able to accomplish with Prop P. And then we also added two new deputy positions this year, and we will add two more new deputy positions next year. Our biggest problem, and which influences the next position, is we have a canine position. But we are dealing with a shortage of vehicles from our car manufacturers. I ordered 9 new vehicles a year ago, June, and I've gotten one.
Oh, my goodness.
That was with the Ford. I've been able to pick up some new vehicles from Chevrolet during this time period, and we're still waiting on our ones. And now I'm getting calls, and we're going to have to order for next year, and we still haven't got this year's vehicles. So
to be
able to add new positions and new deputies, you have to have vehicles to put them in.
Uh-huh.
And that's where our biggest obstacle right now is getting vehicles. And even if you get a new vehicle in, because we'd ordered Ford, so we'd ordered all the equipment that goes into those vehicles for Fords. I can't get them, so I get a Chevy Tahoe. Now I wait 2 months to get the equipment for that Chevy Tahoe. So vehicles has been our biggest obstacle, but we are adding new positions to the county and more deputies with this Prop P, and it's very exciting, and that just adds more coverage out there for the citizens of our county.
How does that make you feel personally, especially with Prop P, but anytime, and I know that we've used the radio station and we've worked, especially when the city and propping up the tax initiatives and making sure people had a clear picture of why it's so important and why it's being asked for and why it's being pushed forward. And I'm glad you brought up the vehicles because that helps people understand a little bit better that you're being served and taken care of and respected and responded to regardless of the call volume. There are aspects that make the job easier and there are aspects that make the job more difficult. The vehicles is a very, very big part of that. But going back since I've known you and we've had those discussions before, just gear and equipment, I mean, has been a struggle at times within our counties between Taney and Stone. And I feel like I'm correct in saying this. I mean, there's been times since I've known you over the years that equipment has been something that has come up before and it's not been cars. When we're talking about ballistics, firearms, it could be any aspect of it. And you've waded your way through that since you've been a young man and been leading the department.
Well, we've been very fortunate with our Citizens in Action group where they've raised a lot of money and bought equipment for us and through other grants and things that we've been able to get the equipment. We're still working on things. We're still working on a new project for 2024 that's going to come out. We're going to start a new division, and we're not putting that out yet, but I'm pretty excited about that. And we just got a lot of good things going on in the sheriff's office right now, it's exciting, and we've actually got academy students. Our academies had really went down statewide from the number of people wanting to get into law enforcement. The Governor Parsons passed that bill. It's called, I'm going to draw a blank now, it's called something blue, to help pay for academies for academy students. And we went from having 7 to 10 academy students in academy classes to we've had 18 in this last class.
Wow. That's
Missouri Sheriff Association.
That's remarkable growth.
In Reed Springs. And the Missouri Sheriff Association Academy in Reed Springs, which Isaac Johnston went through, is our local being able to pull people, employees to that academy. And it's big to have that big a class this year. And we've got four of those academy students already hired working in the jail, and we're excited about them when they graduate coming to the road.
18 in a class, Pam, I think about that. We have experienced growth exponentially across all of our area counties, especially here in the Branson area. Think about the tourist volume that come through here every single year. They're enjoying the lakes. They're enjoying the outdoors, the nature, all of that stuff. The area continues to grow, and so you need the county support. You need those that are interested in the law enforcement profession to get engaged, get themselves educated on the needs of the county, but also they got to go through that door. They got to go through that program because the population isn't going to shrink. We're going to continue to draw people here to the area, and you need those cadets.
You're not too old to join. John, if you want to.
Thank you for bringing that up. I mean, my age, I'm 44. What is the cutoff age?
There's no cutoff age.
Really?
Yeah.
So I could become a part of the sheriff's department
to take the final post test. You have to be 21.
Okay. But there's no cutoff.
No, I've got guys in academy class right now that are probably older than 44.
That's unbelievable. But that's great that, I mean, if you want to serve, you want to get back to the community and have ties in law enforcement, just come on down and get started in the academy.
Yep, that's all through the Missouri Sheriff's Association.
And through the Sheriff's Association, I mean, obviously we know now about the age. What are the costs for a new cadet to get into the academy and go through?
That bill the governor passed for the funding to pay for academies, they can apply, and if they get accepted, that pays for it all.
It's fully funded.
Yes.
Wow. That's
next academy class starts in January. You can contact Missouri Sheriff's Association or go to MSA website and get the information for the academy in Reed Springs.
If I can ask you, and this is a good question, and it's tough in certain ways for our guest Pam, and we've had some really, really good responses to this. Looking at your career, we've had people. I want people to understand the biggest challenges of the job, and if you want to expand on this, great. If not, I want to respect that too. To help people understand just how difficult the job can be. If you can think back on your career, what was the biggest challenge you experienced in your job, or what was the toughest day for you in your career?
I would say probably July 2018 when the duck sank.
Oh, and you are not the first to say that.
You're not the first one that said that.
That was a long 48 hours that I was there.
48 hours for you. How did that impact your team and your department? And what was that like for you responding to that? What was your involvement? If I could, I'd love you to tell us just so we have a better understanding.
I mean, we were, me and my chief deputy, Tim Gideon, were at Stonebridge at a Republican event that night, and when the call came in. And so we were less than 10 miles away. And it was just a long night. It was a very emotional night. And all the families are impacted on that. But basically, we put together all the law enforcement and fire agencies that responded together, put our heads together. And the biggest plus that I can, I mean, it was a horrible, horrible incident, and people lost their lives and the families that were impacted by that. But the cooperation between the law enforcement and Stone Taney, the fire between Stone and Taney, EMS, everybody working together, especially the first 12 hours.
Yeah.
We go to a lot of classes that teach us incident command. I learned more in that time period than any classes I could take from here on out. Everything was like, I mean, everything just grew together.
Yeah.
Everybody working together. Branson was setting up things for the victims. They were providing counseling for the victims' families. It just, everybody worked hand in hand together. And I can't say enough good about Branson Fire, Western Taney County Fire, Branson PD, Taney County Sheriff, Jimmy Russell, now retired.
We all know.
Jimmy was a great mentor to me when I came in, and I'll never forget, on my way there responding, he called me and said, are you on your way? I said, yep. He said, I'll meet you there. I said, and Jimmy was right there beside me the whole night. I mean, and the next day.
48 hours. Oh, Jimmy, and that's a name I know very, very well and will always, always respect, and there's a lot of love in this community for Jimmy's contributions. That's a big name. And a very, very tough 48 hours. And in many ways, I mean, you look at everything we've experienced in our collective counties, that leaps and bounds is the biggest. And in many facets, it's like the world opens up from a trauma perspective, from counseling, search and rescue, recovery. Every part of that process, there were probably just an insurmountable number of firsts for some people being involved there.
And the worst part was the media.
Oh.
When you're dealing with the national media, I figured out real quick, and I don't sugarcoat much, but they're bullies. And they want to grab you by the arm, and, oh, we want to talk to you now. And I didn't deal well with the national media because I don't like to be bullied, and they were bullies. And
getting in the way and being right in the middle or interrupting certain things, that had to have just been, I mean, you think about a nightmare scenario.
My favorite Jimmy Russell quote is CNN van pulled in, and they pulled up to Jimmy and said, hey, where was CNN? Where do you want us to park? And Jimmy turned and looked at him and goes, never heard of you. I had to turn and walk away because I started laughing so hard.
And at that point, I mean, Jimmy's not worried about a parking spot. He's worried about counseling and offering support and being in the moment.
That's the deal. It's like they're intruding in a time when you have way more important things that you've got to be focused on, and they can't be respectful that, hey, when they've got this completed, they're going to update us and let us know. So
would you say, I'd love you to speak about this just a little bit. All this time that you have served, who has been your most important professional contact for you out there in the field after all these years?
Professional contact?
I mean, there's so many names. I think about Ted. Yeah. I think about Chris Byrne. All those guys.
Like I said, Jimmy Russell was a great mentor to me.
Yeah.
Jim Arnott, Brad Cole, two of my closest friends and commandants, and they're always great to bounce things off of. And I've just worked with a lot of good people over the years. Ken Smith, I don't know if Ken listens to pods or not, but Ken was the city manager at Branson West when I came there as police chief, and he hired me. And Ken's still one of my very, very close personal friends and mentors, and thank the absolute world of Ken. And there's just so many throughout my career. I mean, as a young narcotics agent, I had some great sheriffs and chiefs that I worked with, and that list is long of people.
Wow. Oh, I will just say this, a remarkable life, and Doug would appreciate me saying this. This is one of those situations where, 30 minutes, an hour of a podcast, Pam, is not enough time to unpack a 3-decade-plus career in law enforcement. I mean, we had talked about it in preparing for this episode, and we were just getting caught up. There's a lot of stories. There's a lot of incidents and scenes that you have had to manage, a lot of negotiations and mediation and working with community friends and neighbors that are in the trenches and disputing and having an argument out there. Fun part about this, you have settled here, and this community has been good to you, and you've given back so much to Stone County and the Branson area and to us here at the radio. It's been a great relationship and a friendship that has developed over the years. For you, my friend, what's been the best part of being settled here in this area and about the Ozarks? If you had to place it and put it in some words, what's the best part about being here in this area?
Well, it's kind of a neat story. That me and a young lady came here in the spring of 2004 to Branson on vacation.
Right on, right on.
She made the comment that, man, it'd be really nice to live down here. October of 2004, I took the job of Branson West Police Chief. And within 6 to 8 months, that young lady moved here and has been my wife now. We've been together for 20 years, married to 18 years. So my wife, Casey, is probably the instrumental part in that. She's put up with a lot. It's not easy being married to a law enforcement officer, and it's really not easy being married to the sheriff. So she's put up with a lot and dealt with a lot over the years. And we met while I was running the drug task force. I was director of operations of that drug task force the last 3 years I was there. She really didn't care for that high speed all the time.
I bet.
And so slowed down a lot being police chief in Branson West, which was just a phenomenal time, 8 years of my life there at Branson West, and just had an absolute blast there and working with Kenny Smith and a lot of the officers there. But even when I started to run for sheriff, we sat down and wrote out a list of the positive and negatives before I'd come out and announced I was going to run. And
you and Casey together?
Yeah, and the negative she wrote. She wrote, I would not be a good sheriff's politician or sheriff's wife. So, but yeah, she's been huge instrumental and been by my side through almost 20 of this 30 plus years of doing this. And got two great kids. They are just awesome kids. And
son and a daughter, two daughters, two sons.
I got a son and a daughter.
Son and a daughter.
So let me ask you this. What goes through your mind, and maybe not so much now since you don't go out on every call, but when that was your primary, if something happened, you were there before you were sheriff. What goes through your mind when you walk out the door to go to something that could be potentially dangerous and when you leave your wife and your kids? What is that thought? Or do you compartmentalize and just focus on? Or does your wife ever tell you what she feels like when she sees you walk out the door?
No, and as sheriff, I get called in the middle of the night or whenever if something really bad is going on and I respond. To say that I ever sit and think about it, I'm usually, if I'm responding to something like that, I'm usually thinking logistics.
Mm-hmm.
Who else do we need? What do we need at this scene? Where are we at? Who's on scene? Those are.
I didn't know if you went back and got just one last hug or you know something when you walked out the door. But how does she ever tell you how she feels sometimes when you walk out the door? Because I know.
Yeah, she's been with me 20 years. I mean, she kind of knows. I mean, that's just
when it's time, it's time.
Yeah,
time to go. I mean, and so, how do you decide?
We can be having a family dinner, and I get a phone call, and I'll be up and out the door.
Yeah.
That's just normal life for us.
So how do you decide which calls you're going to respond to and which you feel like you don't have to go on?
You know.
You just know. It's just intuitive, right?
I mean, if it's something bad, you know it's time to go. And my guys know if something bad's going on, I'll be right there with them. And, you just know. I mean, my guys keep me in the loop on anything going on that's – because my pet peeve is to walk in on a – any given morning and the media call me and go, hey, what happened with this last night? And I don't know anything about it.
Yeah.
So my guys keep me in the loop of what's going on because that's a big thing. If our media is calling you, you don't even know what they're talking about. Right. Something's happening in your county. So,
And that is really, really good. Doug said it best. I mean, folks and community members that listen to this episode with Sheriff Doug Rader, and anybody in the emergency field, folks, this is not a situation where, you know, you come home at the end of the day and you're in family mode and the phone's not going to ring again. Our folks that are in the law enforcement field or first responders, it's a moment's notice. It's a ready preparedness situation. And Sheriff Rader, you said it best. that it could be a family reunion, it could be a dinner, it could be a mini vacation, or heck, you're going to see a show, or you are actively involved in the community. I know that very, very well. You could be driving to City Hall or wherever it is you're going, and whether it's a scanner or a cell phone or whatever it is, that call comes in, life stops at that point. You are figuring out what the scenario is, what the situation is, if you need to be there, and who on your team is going to be the one that is the first responder. And Pam has done this since we created the podcast, and we have said it. The families sacrifice just as much as the individuals that are in the field, because they are the ones that have to be ready to say goodbye, not knowing what the day is going to bring, what that call is going to entail, and what the scenario is going to be. And then there is that moment of time, 5 minutes, 10 minutes, an hour, 2 hours, dare I say 8 hours or longer, because the scenario changes all the time. The thoughts that the kids have and the spouse has, that's a lot to tackle, just as much as the stress level is when you're out in the field and you're trying to prepare yourself to tackle that call and serve our community and everybody that lives over in Stone County. So I don't want to take Pam's thunder away from her by any means, and she would say it just as I would, talking directly to Casey and your kids right now, and saying thank you to them for giving you to us every single day when you're interrupted in your daily life. And that is a lot of respect to your family for letting you go and settling into that routine for as long as you guys have. A lot of respect to your family.
Yes, we say it takes a special kind of person to do what you do. It takes a really special kind of person to live with the person that does that, right?
No doubt.
And raise those kids when you can't go to the art show or to the parent-teacher conference because you've got a call or whatever. And again, it's not a 9-to-5 job. You're on call 24/7.
There's meetings every night somewhere, and
yeah,
most of the time they want the sheriff. Everybody wants the sheriff to be at their meetings, and
I know you try to be at most of those meetings.
At most of those meetings, some of them, I've learned to say no, and it's taken a long time. But it took me a long time to realize that my family's first, and I need to take care of them.
Good for you. Good for you. But we appreciate you. We appreciate your team, and we appreciate your family. And a lot of times, I think we forget to say that we appreciate your family, and that's really what we're trying to do here. Think about you as just Doug Rader, right? And you're just like me, you're just like Josh, but yet you go out and you do extraordinary things every day. And we just want people to see that other side. We want them to see your heart of why you're able to go do what you do. You couldn't go do what you do if you didn't have that support network at home.
Exactly right.
Yeah. And it's pretty powerful going back to you being 21 years of age and making that decision to go. That's a big deal. It's just as important as deciding to serve country in the military. It is just as important as being on the line and trying to restore power, or getting behind the wheel of an ambulance driving at high speed to respond to a call. It is so, so important. It needs to be upheld, and that's why we tell the stories. We frame it, because it is more than just a badge. It is more than a uniform. There is a person that represents the badge and gets in that uniform, and there's a life attached to that. And respect is earned when we're educated and we take the time to share the story and just pause for a second and just learn what's going on.
And next year is an election year, and yes, I will be running again. So
I'm glad.
I miss that a lot, but yes, I will be running again in next year, in election year. So,
and I tell you what, the time that you've given Stone County, the citizens over there in Stone County can take pride, because when you put your name on that ballot and you run again, you know what goes with that, and I can say the word, stability and trust. Stability and trust.
Well, I got a lot of good people, because I'm only as good as my worst deputy, and I have a lot of good men and women that the public sees every day out there representing the sheriff's office. So,
well, and again, you know, you think about the mediation and working in disputes and all of that stuff, too. Best part about it is you can go out there as well, too. And I'd imagine that Sheriff Doug Rader in some situations has offered comfort And to some people out there, when you're working on disputes or you're working on recovery situations out there, a hug from a sheriff's deputy can go a long way as well, too. And I imagine in 3 decades, you've given out some hugs, haven't you?
Oh, a couple.
Right on. Doug, to close out this episode, and it's been remarkable, and we are pushing an hour. This conversation has just flown by, and it's one of those scenarios, again, where I wish I had a lot more time. What would you most want to say to community members just to help them understand the office a little bit better and the job that goes along with it? If you had a chance just to tell them and give them a little bit more insight into what you do, what would you most want to say to community members out there?
You know, we, as I said before, we work for the citizens of Stone County, and we respect them, and I think we are very fortunate to live in an area that is very supportive of law enforcement. You know, there's other areas of the state, of this state, and of the country that are not as supportive as law enforcement. We're very, very blessed, and we enjoy serving the citizens of this county. I enjoy being the sheriff. I know it's a privilege. It's an honor to do this, and I respect that. And it's just, like I said, it's part of, it's who I am. It's